Welcome back to Corporate Rehab, everyone. Hey, Nami.
Hey, Michael.
All right, let's just jump right in. So we're going to talk today about managers, and more specifically, like the practice of, managing people, leading people, whatever you want to call it, whatever cool word HR is using these days, to talk about people who have teams. And we're looking first specifically at a 2016 Harvard Business Review article that estimated that the potential loss of economic output to be about $3 trillion, which at the time was about 17% of the GDP. This analysis came from data that was provided by the US Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it was looking at 23.8 million managers, first-line supervisors, administrators in the American workforce in 2014. This does include both public and private sector, but it does exclude IT-related functions. So that does work out to be about one manager or administrator for every 4.7 employees, so 5 employees.
And overall, these managers and administrators made up for about 17.6% of the workforce and 30% of total compensation. A combination of studies allowed the writers of this article to conclude that as much as 50% of all internal compliance activity is of questionable value. So that's a lot. And assuming that the 111 million American workers who are not managers, supervisors, or administrators are spending 16% of their time on internal compliance, and this estimate comes from Deloitte Economics study, think about it, half of that time is wasted.
So Ed Zitrin of The Atlantic wrote that, quote, "The United States, more than anywhere else in the world, is addicted to the concept of management," end quote. He goes on to explain that it's become a title over a discipline, which is something I really agree with. He says the idea we have now is that if you work hard enough in corporate America, one day you become a manager, the person who makes orders rather than takes orders.
And Zitron called this type of management hall monitor, and claims it's extremely difficult to execute remotely. So COVID-19 pandemic has exposed how little corporate America respects our entry-level workers, one. And he acknowledges that for many large companies, the first few years of one's careers are simply time for them to prove themselves over being mentored and trained.
He describes a management concept developed by Lawrence J. Peter called the Peter Principle that examines what happens when someone who is good at their job gets promoted to a role that requires a different skill set. And I think this is something that we see happen a lot in especially corporate environments once you sort of get out of those frontline roles. But it happens a lot in those frontline roles in like retail and restaurants as well. This happens until the person gets to a role where they're unable to fulfill the needs, reaching their quote unquote maximum incompetence. The National Bureau of Economic Research performed a study that found companies prioritize current job performance when deciding on a promotion rather than what the person can bring to the role that they're being considered for. Zitrin explains that this places higher value on offering the incentive of a promotion to get more out of their workers. This runs the risk of filling your company with bad managers.
And I think we've worked with some
I
bad
think we both
managers.
absolutely understand that, yeah.
Yes, and most US companies are designed with a single career track that is management, and compensation comes through promotions rather than doing great work. So Zitron suggests opening more tracks, specifically one for people who are very good at their specific job to be compensated appropriately without the need to manage others.
Yeah, and one thing that I want to touch on a little bit before we jump too much into things is, we talked a little bit, Nami, you talked about Zitrin's, discussing how the COVID-19 pandemic has really exposed how little corporate America respects or frankly cares about entry-level workers. And I think we have an episode, I think it's actually next week. No, it's one that is actually has already come out, so never mind. It is one we've already recorded. But it really talks about, I think, oh no, it isn't one we've recorded. I don't know. We have another episode, though, that is vaguely about the sort of understanding of like corporate America mm-hmm. to, you know, frontline worker. And I we'll get more into that, but it is a huge disparity that I see in corporations.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, well, we'll take a quick break and then we will be right back with our thoughts.
One of the things that I was, you know, as we were talking about the articles that, you know, we were mentioning, just as an organization thinks about its organizational structure, you know, you have to really consider the roles and responsibilities of each role, right? And just because, let's say, you had a manager before, it does not necessarily mean that that role needs to be backfilled, right? It, maybe, you know, that's an opportunity for you to really look and restructure, right? So I think it's just kind of important that people get to continue, get the opportunity to grow in their careers through, I guess, understanding how the roles and responsibilities evolve in the organization as they move through their career.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that really struck me and one of the reasons I really kind of wanted to talk about this specific thing, because full transparency, this actually started out as a completely different episode. We were talking kind of managers, but like a different aspect of this. But as I was doing the research, this other sort of like thought came up, and this is kind of what the episode turned into. But what really struck me was where Zitron was talking about the need for multiple career tracks, mm-hmm. because right now we only really think about career in terms of upward mobility. So mm-hmm. you're really not a successful, you know, corporate person unless you are moving upward.
Yeah.
You know, you are increasing title, you're increasing responsibility. And what we actually need to do, just like as a society in the US, when it comes to careers, is also just being able to recognize and reward people for doing their job particularly well and growing their skill mm-hmm. set within what they do. Because I think part of the reason we have a, you know, a country full of bad managers mm-hmm. is because we're forcing people into management roles when the only thing we're really vetting them on is how well they've done the job in the past mm-hmm. and not what they can bring to, you know, the role they're coming into. And this is something that you and I had actually talked about, because I was in the midst of a promotion as I was leaving mm-hmm. the job that we were at. And I was getting really frustrated because they weren't really allowing me the opportunity to just show like what I could actually bring.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that anyone wanted to talk about was what I had done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And that never made sense to me. And even in the interview that I had that you were a part of, that mm-hmm. you were on the panel for, I actually remember you being the only person that asked a question about what I could actually bring to the role
mm-hmm.
versus what I had done in the past.
Okay.
And I think that that was a really big... it was a nice thing for me, even though, and I actually remember I didn't have a great answer for what you asked because I wasn't prepared for it. The only thing in that particular company that they really have you prepare for interviews
yeah.
is about your past.
Yeah.
It is never about what ideas you have or whatever. And so the question that you had asked me, which was about ideas, like had totally thrown me off.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wasn't ready for it, but...
I think I went off the script on that question.
You did. You asked for permission.
Oh, did I?
You did. You asked for permission to go off script, which HR was like, yeah, go ahead. and then we just got to talk. But it was actually, because I had just had an interview like 3 weeks or maybe a month before that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very like structured
yes.
by the book.
Yes.
And it went terribly. Like
yeah.
there was one person on the panel that just ate me alive. And I know you know what I'm talking about, because I've talked about it nonstop for years.
Yes.
but yeah, there was one person that just like completely ate me alive on that panel.
Mm-hmm.
And So I think that was kind of what I had going into the one that you were on, is like I over-prepared, but like in the wrong way.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's for a lot of corporations. You know, when I got my role at the last company, and even, you know, a few other companies in my career, you know, they ask those behavioral situational questions, right? And you have to answer in the CAR format, yeah. Right? You have to give your context and you have to give the action that you took and then what were the results, right? Yeah. And so you almost, you're like a robot and you talk about what you've done in the past, your accomplishments. And, you know, if you stick to that format and practice it, you know, there are people who ace those interviews.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's their peak. Once you bring them in, you're like, oh my gosh, your interview was literally your best self. And yeah. You are not cool. You know, there's just a lot to do to onboard the particular person to yeah. the job, right? And so I think that was just something that I learned as I interviewed a lot of people, hired a lot of people, is great, you know, I think you're here because you already have accomplished mm-hmm. Things, right? And so I want to know what you can bring to the table, to the business in the future, right? Like I want to see that the candidates are forward thinking about the future, imagining themselves being in the role.
Yeah. And, you know, since we're talking about managers and sort of the discipline of mm-hmm. being a manager, because it is a skill set and it's a completely different skill set from, you know, just being good at your job. Mm-hmm. And I know from like my retail days, my fast food days, that if someone is really good at their job, they think that earns them the right to be a manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I will actually credit McDonald's mm-hmm. in like really instilling in me what being a manager meant. Mm-hmm. Were there functional things to being a manager that mattered at McDonald's, like inventory, food cost, paper? Like, of course, all mm-hmm. of those things. But it was also about inspiring people, getting the best out of the people. Like it was, and you know, I learned very early on of like not yelling at people. That's mm-hmm. not going to get you as a result. If you feel like you need to yell, it's better to just walk away for the moment. You know, how to diffuse situations, even with customers. Like, I really mm-hmm. learned the basis of what I know.
Yeah.
But I think that you've talked about this between us, and I've heard you kind of talk about this like in mixed company, but
mm-hmm.
you've actually talked about like, you've had people who've come in and done interviews, they kill it on CAR format, but then they get into the role and they're just not what you expected. It's exactly what you said. They gave you the best version of themselves.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that isn't the reality of the situation. Whereas then you've had interviews that didn't really go so well.
Mm-hmm.
And on paper, it would be like a no, don't hire mm-hmm. this person.
Yeah.
But you hired that person and they actually did really, really great.
Yeah, superstars. And, you know, I think, and again, that was by trial and error, right? Because I did interview a lot of people. I did hire a lot of people. And I realized like part of interviewing is performance,
yeah.
right? You're learning your lines. You're anticipating what the other person is going to say, right? And you have lines prepared to kind of spit it out, right? And I think, you know, there was one particular candidate who I actually did end up hiring. And I think if there were other people on the panel, they may not have agreed on hiring this person, but I had no regrets hiring her. She just flubbed,
okay.
right? Like this CAR format was nowhere to be found. She just could not. But I read her resume and I knew that she could do the job.
Right.
And so I just said, you know what, let's stop talking in CAR format because this is not natural.
Yeah.
You know, tell me about a time when, right?
Yeah.
So I said, you know what, like, let's just have a conversation. Like, I'm going to just ask you some questions and you can just answer to the best of your ability. And like, you could see her visibly relax,
yeah.
right? And it just kind of put her in a position where she was just able to talk. And I was like, okay, you know, you're the person that I'm looking for. And so ended up hiring her. From day one, she said, I want, you know, there were a lot of things that I was doing at the time. And she said, okay, like, I want to take this off your plate. Yeah. So tell me who I need to go talk to and I will go figure it out.
Yeah.
And I said, oh my gosh, you are a godsend. I love you.
Yeah. And then you left. Sorry.
Not immediately after. Yes.
It was pretty close. No, but I think about that a lot, and that actually, I'm really glad that you wanted to talk about that that you ended up talking about it, because that particular situation was really what was coming to mind. And I think it not only speaks to sort of the flawed idea of how people are interviewed in mm-hmm. general, mm-hmm. but also the flawed sort of like, I think if you weren't the manager that you were,
mm-hmm.
and you were just sort of following what had been laid out for you in the hiring, you know,
yeah.
whatever, which I don't know what a lot of that looked like. I only knew it from the candidacy side.
Right.
But, you know, had you followed that, you potentially would have missed out on, well, you probably would have missed out on a mm-hmm. really, really great hire.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that person continued to do really great work even after you left.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I think, just shows that sort of like flawed mentality of like, again, what a manager actually is. And I think that's where sometimes companies get in their own way
mm-hmm.
because they're so focused on procedure. And this was the whole thing with my promotion too, is like they were so focused on checking these boxes
mm-hmm.
that they weren't listening to me. And then by the time they claimed they wanted to listen to me, I was already gone, like mm-hmm. mentally, I was already checked out.
Yeah.
And so by the time it got to the point where like they were reaching out and saying, okay, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
How can we make this better? I was so fed up with the entire process. Mm-hmm. And this was like, I had been asking this for this promotion forever. I kept being told it's not mm-hmm. ever going to happen. And then all of a sudden out of the blue, it came. But again, it came so late.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't, I don't know whose fault that was. I don't think it was my manager's fault, but it was just, I think the sort of bureaucracy and like, what's the word I'm looking for? Just red tape.
Yeah.
It's just that, like, I understand procedures. Again, coming from McDonald's, procedures make sense. I get
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that notion of like the procedure has to be king, and then any sort of like independent thought process outside of that just becomes a wasteland.
Yeah. And I love processes.
Same.
You know,
yeah.
I think there are, but there's a time and a place for
exactly.
it, right? Like
exactly.
you need to be flexible as well. And, you know, I think it's interesting when we talk about, you know, management in general, because for me, you know, I majored in business in undergrad and I have my MBA. And, you know, one of the classes that you have to take is leadership. Mm-hmm. So I've taken leadership classes both in undergrad and, you know, I think at the time it just felt very fluffy, right?
Yeah, like, for sure.
Okay, great. And it's so far from career-wise, right? Like you're straight out of college, like you're not taking on quote unquote any real leadership positions at that point in time. And then during my MBA, it was, you know, I think it had a little bit of a different meaning to what really truly makes a good leader.
Yeah.
And a manager. And I think that's where, again, we miss the mark of just because you do your job well and you do it better than others does not mean that you're necessarily cut out to be a people leader.
Yeah.
Which I think we've both experienced.
Yeah.
In our lives. And I think it's just, and I think that's why you see so much of the workforce craving like this unicorn leader that exists somewhere out there, right? Of like what that leader could possibly look like, with a lot of different quotes and memes on what makes good leadership.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago
mm-hmm.
Where we were in a position where I think it's exactly what you said, that unicorn leader, where they felt like they weren't finding that internally.
Mm-hmm.
So they started hiring from the outside. So like, it's not that like I honestly think it's a combination of leadership as a discipline is not really taught, especially mm-hmm. if you're not going to business school. Mm-hmm. Or I guess, is you didn't go to business school.
I did.
Did you? That's yes. what an MBA is?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I don't know. My dad has an MBA.
Yes, like, business school.
You know, not everyone goes that route. Mm-hmm. A lot of people go that route.
Yeah.
I would argue to say a lot of people have MBAs these days.
Yes.
It's not the accomplishment that I think it was right. when my dad got his MBA, you know, in the 90s. Mm-hmm. But it's just interesting because I felt like coming from the background that I did, which was, you know, I had managed for McDonald's. I had managed, you know, in salons.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first got to the company that we were at, after like a year, so I guess not first got there, but after about a year, I started sort of expressing like, okay, so what's next for me? Is this being a manager or whatever? And I saw other people in my same role getting promoted. So mm-hmm. I asked like, what is it that they're doing that I'm not doing? And mm-hmm. why am I not being considered for these, you know, same opportunities?
Mm-hmm.
Which some of it was location. Those people lived in the areas where they're, you know, they needed managers, mm-hmm. whatever. But what was interesting is I actually would get a lot of pushback for being, I was being told I hadn't managed before, which I thought was so interesting because the beauty retailer I was at had wanted to move me from the service side of the business more to the retail side and actually like have a store of my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember having a conversation with the district manager at the time. And I said, like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I don't know how to run a store. I've never done that before. And it was right off the tails of like, we were without a general manager at the time. So I was the acting general manager. Why that was the structure, I will never understand, but it was. So I was a general manager at the time and we had missed like a cycle count, which I'm going to be honest to this day, can't even tell you what a cycle count is. I don't know,
okay.
But we missed one and it was a really big deal. My old general manager who had got moved to a new store had called me and basically was like, what the hell is going on over there?
Mm-hmm.
Why are things not getting done? And I was like, I don't know what any mm-hmm. of this stuff is. So I brought that up to the district manager and I was like, I just missed a cycle count. Like, why are you asking me to take hold of this huge, like it was one of the busier stores in the area. And the answer was really simple. And it was that I could lead people and mm-hmm. they could see that. And they were like, your leadership capabilities are actually what we want. Things like cycle counts and,
mm-hmm.
you know, all these other procedural things, you have other managers in your store that know mm-hmm. how to do that. And all you need to do is know that those things are there and they need to be done. But like, do you, Michael, need to know how to do a cycle count today to be a general manager? No.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's more important is that you have the leadership capabilities
mm-hmm.
to manage a store. And to be really transparent, at this point, I already knew I was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
I was going through all of my, what do they call it? Where like you're hired, but they're waiting to make sure like your background check, your drug test, all of that stuff is going to work out. Plus I had like a reload. So it was a really long process to like
mm-hmm.
get from the offer to acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I already knew I was leaving, so I was mostly just trying to like not promise anything, but also like not lose my job prematurely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then when I got to where we worked, I was so thrown off because all of the sudden that like natural ability to lead, which had been recognized,
mm-hmm.
didn't mean hardly anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the sudden I was having to like prove myself in a very different way
mm-hmm.
because was I the best person at my job? No, I wasn't. But
mm-hmm.
I, again, knew how to lead people. I knew how to get people on my side. Like
mm-hmm.
I had all of those sort of soft skills.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying the other managers didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I never quite understood. I never got a good answer about why my soft skills were not as valuable as the sort of like skills that were required to be in that, to manage that role.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause
that's what threw me off is like, I was competent. I was getting, you know, strong to very strong ratings.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still this like notion of like, well, you've never managed before.
Yeah. So I think that kind of what you just said provoked the thought in me of, you know, again, I think corporations love processes and procedures.
Yeah.
And could it be that there wasn't a checklist to say this person displays leadership qualities if they check all these boxes?
Yeah.
Check, 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 right? Because part of performance reviews, when you go in and, you know, you have these conversations with other directors and above on, you know, who should be promoted, and you're talking about their performances, some of that is objective, but some of that is subjective, right? And everyone has different experiences, and everyone has different views, and that all plays into how a person is viewed as an employee, right? And I truly don't think, from what I've seen, there was a, in any of the places that I worked with, to say, here are the qualities that define what makes a good leader, or what this person is ready for a manager or a leadership position.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. I think that that is just one of the things that really threw me off, was that for a company that size, and at that point we were part of it. No, we had just come off of being part of a huge company, but we weren't independent yet. We were still part of a major conglomerate, one of the big, you know, conglomerates in the industry. And the fact that it was an existing conglomerate, you know, but they just didn't seem to have a lot of those, like, almost like safeguards in place.
Yeah. And I, you know, it wasn't just that place, because I've worked at other, you know, corporations as well. And I haven't seen that really anywhere of
done well.
Yeah, done well, to say, you know, and that's why I think a lot of people, or a lot of places, have bad managers, because, you know, some of those qualities are not just like a checklist type of quality, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just interesting to see how promotions are done in corporate America. And again, putting people in places that, frankly, they have no business being in.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I think back to some of my managers, you know, I'll start with the best managers. They were usually the ones that empowered me, meaning they didn't micromanage. They were not a hall monitor. You know, they did not care if I was, you know, on teams at 8 a.m., right?
Yeah.
Till 5 p.m., you know? And they allowed me to do my job, right? And allow me to really have my own space to do my own work with my team, which I really appreciated. And then there was appreciation for what I've done. Like, you know, thank you for your work. And also, if I want to bring my team up for recognition, they were open to it. They will listen to me, and you felt heard, right?
Yeah.
One of my managers, couple of my managers, I think we live in a world where we multitask like crazy. But our one-on-one time was our one-on-one time. And I've had, I think, one or two managers really do this, where it stood out to me of she would actually close her laptop, have nothing in between us. She would have her, you know, notebook for note-taking, and, you know, have eye-to-eye. Like, you know, we would have eye contact and we would have a conversation, which, you know, it is the, with that body language, you feel heard.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think there were just a lot of, there were some characteristics that really stood out to me as, you know, I want to make sure those are the type of traits that I want to have as I grow in my career with my team, whoever I end up managing, right? Or who I was managing at the time. On the flip side of that, you know, I've also had my share of really bad managers, where I remember in one particular role, you know me, Michael, like I try to do my best at everything that
to
I
a
do.
Fault.
So let me tell you about a time where I said, I will just do just enough, just good enough to have something but it's not like it's not my best work.
Was
like
I'm not for this.
No, no, oh, this okay. wasn't even for the oh, company we, okay. where okay. we worked together, because the manager that we had was just tore everyone up and everything apart. And she was the expert at everything. She knew everything best. And literally, people cannot do anything that would... so, you know, you kind of stop trying because you're like, well, if you think everything... if I think I can take constructive criticism, right? I can take criticism. And I can take feedback. But if it's just all criticism...
yeah.
And you're not telling me a way to improve, then I'm not going to do it, right?
Yeah. I like that you are describing something that happened to you somewhere else, but we actually went through something, this exact same thing together, okay. though.
Yes. You're right.
They weren't our manager.
Right.
But they were a manager of a different department.
Right.
And it was, I was laughing because it was exactly the same thing where, and it does make me... Because I was sometimes a little bit unpopular in saying, listen, this person is 99% terrible. There is 1% that I see why they're here.
Mm-hmm.
I see that, you know, they get things done.
Mm-hmm.
The customers that they dealt with respected them, listened to them, whatever. Mm-hmm. They were able to get things done. What the challenge and where I don't think that they were necessarily a good manager, even though they weren't our manager, but we had to deal with them all the time,
mm-hmm.
is that it was that there was so little constructive anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, this sucks. Why is it like this?
Mm-hmm.
This deck is put together incorrectly, which we didn't even put the deck together. but their team did. But, you know, this deck is put, you know, together incorrectly. I'm not seeing efficacy. I'm not seeing whatever. And then to even go as far as sometimes is like, well, why can't we say this? And it's like, well, that's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay, who cares? And it's like, well, we do, because we can't just go and say illegal things.
Yeah.
And so it just blew my mind that went on for a year
mm-hmm.
before anything was quote unquote done,
mm-hmm.
which nothing was done. Mm-hmm. They allowed the person to leave looking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think we have a myriad of stories about that specific situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is really... I didn't even realize maybe what I was thinking about as we were putting this episode together. But that... it continues to blow my mind that issue was flagged how many times through how many people. How many teams went to... like, would come together to go to HR and mm-hmm. say, look... mm-hmm. this is not working.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this person is not exhibiting anything that you tell mm-hmm. us you want us to exhibit. And the response was always just like, okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting us know. And like, it never, you know, seemed to go beyond that.
Right. And I think, you know, going back to the traits, right?
Yeah.
The traits of just being negative, right? The negativity. And then also operating with fear, or you're actually causing fear in others,
yeah.
right? You're intimidating other people. You know, this was the case that I did experience again elsewhere as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of people have mentioned this person by name in their exit interviews.
Mm.
You know, the top three reasons as to why I'm leaving, it's this person. And that person... remained for as long as, you know, I know. And it just goes to show, if these many people are complaining about a particular manager and you're not doing anything about it because you just value this person's expertise, then maybe don't have this person manage people,
yeah.
but create a different role for them where their expertise and whatever it is, the positive things that they bring to the table, let that shine. Because yeah. I don't think that, you know, this person was all bad, right? And, you know, who we talked about, it Right. It's not.
It was 99%.
Right. Yeah. But yeah. I think there were, as you said, there were positive things that you could have spun to bring positive changes to the organization had you not given these people the type of positions that they held.
Yeah.
But they were just not structured that way.
They would have been a great consultant, honestly, I think, for that department, not for us. We did not need their help. But because even after that person left, there was a leader after that that I cited as worse. Because I was like, at least with the first one, I knew how they felt.
Yeah.
With the second one, that was like getting shiesty, and like they were saying one thing in one room and another in another room. And so that's where I can at least respect if someone's going to be hateful, like be hateful to my face. And like, you know what I mean? Like I can deal with that. Is it fun? Mm-hmm. Did I love those meetings? No, I do think that a lot of the bonding that our team did in that specific time frame really was like of the trauma of like having to go through these meetings, having to rework ideas that were essentially done and we were ready to move forward on. And then when we did deliver what they wanted, it still, you know, fell was short. Nothing but critiques.
Yeah.
And you know, we, and I'm sure this story will come up later, but, you know, we really, at one point, were putting ourselves in harm's way for this one particular person. And, you know, just going back to this sort of, like, idea of what a leader is and how they should act, and it continues to just blow my mind that all up and down, everyone knew what was going on, and no one ever did anything about it. No one either cared enough or just wanted to, I guess, address it in a way that was actually going to work for us as a team and just as people. And so, but yeah, and even once we did that, once we put ourselves in harm's way, we kind of pulled off the impossible, it still was almost, I would say, 90% critiques when we kind of started showing what we had worked on.
Yeah.
And so I think that's just where, and I don't need to be endlessly praised. I know that's a big, like, millennial sort of stereotype that we need endless praise, but I need to be treated like a person.
Right.
And I remember this situation got big enough that the local leader wanted to talk to me about it directly, and you and I were talking about that. Dude, can we talk about this?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, no. Can we talk about this?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, we can cut it if you don't like it. But I had gone to you because we were talking about it, and we both always kind of knew what was going on there. And I said, like, this is what's happened. This is who wants to talk to me, and this is what I want to say. And one of the things that I brought up was, if you're allowing this leader to act and say the things that they do, you are telling me I am allowed to do those things to whoever I want.
Yes.
I can talk that way to that person. I can talk that way to the local leader. Like, I can talk that way to HR. Because you're showing me a leader who is just walking around literally doing whatever they want. That tells me I can do whatever I want because no one is stopping this. And I remember you just saying, let's just stick to facts. But in my mind, that was a fact. Right. Like, you were showing me the behavior that you value in this organization, and it's bad leadership. It's bad management. And, you know, it never, in my opinion, ever really got better from a leadership standpoint. But it's just, I don't know. But I just go back to like being told I couldn't be a leader because I had never managed people. But it's just like, but why then am I able to sort of, I mean, we all predicted what was going to happen in the end, which was that person left. And, you know, it just, it's so frustrating.
Yes.
I don't want to think about it anymore.
Well, so another trait that I found to be great to have in your managers, which I found to be missing in a lot of the managers that I saw, was humility.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing because you're right and I didn't think about that one.
And I say that because if you come into an organization as a leader, you almost have an automatic respect just out of the title that you have, right?
Absolutely.
That's just how corporate America is built. If you're coming in as a VP or if you're coming in as a C-level executive, people already know that you've accomplished, you know, certain milestones in your career that have put you on the map to be a leader in this particular organization, right? And I think what is really refreshing is when leaders are able to say, I don't know, and I don't know what I don't know.
Absolutely.
So if you're new to the organization, for you to be, you to look at the organization and say, I want to hear what you know, and I want you to tell me what you know about the business, about the people, what is it? And coming in without, because there are also people where they listen so that they can, you know,
respond.
Right.
Yeah.
And they already have pre-existing
Absolutely.
Ideas. And obviously all of us do, right? It's just, it's natural. But they come in with these notions. And I think where it got to be really frustrating were when some people would come in from day one hot, like, I'm going to make this decision, and this decision. And you're like, you know nothing about this business. I've been toiling and, you know, this business, I understand this business inside and out. And so suddenly what they say becomes the law, and no one says anything else because they're like, well, in the hierarchy, you are so much higher up on the ladder than I am. So we'll just take your, you know, advice, which is crazy, right? Like, you don't know anything about this business yet because you come from, you have some other business background, you think you can copy paste that, right? Which is, I think, the definition of insanity.
Well, and I think too, and you know, we have other episodes about, you know, CEOs in particular, but it does show me that I think when it comes to executives, especially, you know, C-suite executives, it is it's a club.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, it's probably not the best word for it. It's the only word I can think of. It's very like incestuous.
Mm-hmm.
Like they all give each other jobs. They all jump around. You know what I mean? Like
right.
they form these little teams and clubs. And they move around. But the problem is I think it's exactly what you're saying. They lack the humility. They lack the ability to say, I don't know, because they come in thinking it is my job to know everything. And I think it's exactly what Ed Zitron's talking about, which is I don't need a CEO to be an expert in whatever it is I work in. I need a CEO to know how a company works to lead the company to ultimate success. Now, does them understanding those things help with that? Of course. And over time, they need to know those things. But like, you know, the one example I'm thinking of is someone comes into an industry they've never worked in,
mm-hmm.
and they spent a year doing basically a PR tour mm-hmm. about their contributions to that industry, which
mm-hmm.
they were barely working in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very little about the teams who had been doing this work prior to that, even the legacy of, you know, the people who had kind of built these brands up to be what they are today. And I don't know. It's just so out of touch. We're out of time. We're like really out of time. We'll probably have another episode about this. The sort of overall subject matter again, because I think I didn't realize I had as much to say as I did about it, and I think we both have a lot more thoughts. So thank you so much for listening, everybody. Thanks, Nami, for talking with me. You can follow us on Twitter at Corp Rehab Pod, on Instagram at Corporate Rehab Pod. These are for like real-time thoughts, reactions. We post some fun memes. You can leave us a rating, a review on whatever platform you're listening to us on. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.